You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
This is the last cowboy song, the end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost.
Hello, listeners, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the City of Man podcast. This is Coyle Neal, and you are joining us for the second half of a conversation between me, Michael Farmer, and Danny Anderson about country music in the 2010s. We pick it up now with our next artist. Another artist who has sold very well in the last decade is a guy named Kane Brown. Brown got his start on Facebook and Kickstarter. He started posting videos of himself doing covers of Billy Currington songs, and then occasionally older singers like Alan Jackson or George Strait, because we're now in that era where they are classic country, which it's one of those old guy moments that I have. Brown hit it big with his cover of Check Yes or No.
It started way back in third grade, and I used to sit beside Emmylou A. A pink dress, a matching bow, and her ponytail. She kissed me on the school bus, but told me not to tell. Next day I chased her around the playground, across the monkey bars to the merry-go-round. Then Emmylou got caught passing me a note. Before the teacher took it, I read what she wrote. Do you love me? Do you wanna be my friend? And if you do, well then don't be afraid to take me by the hand. If you want to, I think this is how love goes. Check yes or no.
He used the 7 million views he got of that video to launch a Kickstarter campaign for an album, which brought him to the attention of the broader audience of country music fans, got him a little bit of radio play, which then brought him to the attention of Florida Georgia Line, whom he started opening for, which finally got him a contract with a Nashville studio. So Brown, these names that are on this list, listener, if you're wondering, these are people who are best who sold the most albums in the last decade. Brown made it onto that list, although he's the newest person on the scene. Like Carrie Underwood, Kane Brown is kind of a great example of the ongoing collapse of the Nashville industry as the gatekeeper. Although Brown himself gets a Nashville contract, so it also shows that it's worthwhile to be in the industry. He's worth listening to. If you've not listened to him, he's good, especially his song Used to Love You Sober.
Life was great, wouldn't have changed a thing. I had it all, but with you I had more. But out of nowhere, out of the blue, our love turned into a war. Now you're gone, you moved on, and I hate the way I'm feeling. Now the only way I know that I can get you off my mind, to keep a bottle so close, try to leave it all behind. And I couldn't get enough. Girl, I'm drowning drunk in love. I used to think you'd never say it's over. I used to love you sober. I used to love you sober.
That's kind of his big original hit, and it's a solid country song. He only has a few albums out. You can listen to everything he's done in a couple of hours, and it's not time badly spent. He's so new, I don't want to say he's great, but he's certainly interesting. And now that he has Nashville resources behind him, I think he's probably someone to keep an eye on also. You guys want to add anything about Kane Brown?
I'm surprised you didn't mention that he is one of country music's periodic non-white stars. I believe his father is African American and his mother is white. That's still fairly unusual for country music, even as it borrows more and more from hip hop. There are not a whole lot of black country stars.
Right.
Him, Darius Rucker. Remember Cowboy Troy? I guess he maybe qualifies as a star. And then Charlie Pride.
Yeah, well, and even Darius Rucker, you know, didn't get his start in country. He was known before that. And again, who knows if Kane Brown will stick around or not? I don't know. Luke Combs is a throwback to '90s country singers. So I actually encountered him first when he was a musical guest on Saturday Night Live a year or so ago. And as with basically every musical guest on Saturday Night Live, the sound quality was terrible. That's not what it's set up for. But the song was really interesting, and it turns out it is one of his it is probably his best song. The song "Beer Never Broke My Heart."
Bust my line, a couple beautiful girls tell me goodbye. Trucks break down, dogs run off, politicians lie, been fired by the boss. It takes one hand to count the things I can count on. No, there ain't much man that ain't ever let me down. Seems to torn this boy apart. Like a neon dream, it just don't know me. The bars in this guitar. And long neck eyes, cold beer never broke my heart.
If you haven't heard that, go listen to it. It's fantastic. As with kind of all of those 90s country singers, he's slightly overproduced, working through the Nashville industry and doing songs with fairly standard country themes. When I say he's a throwback to the 90s, I mean that in the best sense of the word. He's really solid. His songs are kind of right in the tradition of country music. He's got another one called "When It Rains, It Pours."
Sunday morning, man, she woke up fighting mad. Bitching and moaning on and on about the time I had. And by Tuesday, you could say that girl was good as gone. And then when Thursday came around, I was all alone. So I went for a drive to clear my mind. Ended up at a Shell on I-65. She was wrong. I was calling number 5 on the radio station. What a 4-day, 3-night beach vacation. Deep sea senorita fishing down in Panama. And I ain't gotta see my ex future mother in law anymore. Oh Lord, when it rains, it pours.
Again, it's also a good, like, classic country song, which isn't to say it's a great song. It's just a good classic song. He's also, in the past few months, taken advantage of the coronavirus to release a song called 6 Feet Apart.
Dogwood start to bloom and the crickets hum their tune. That's usually about the time that I feel most alone. But the news has all been bad and the whole world seems so sad. I ain't had much else going on, so I sat down and wrote this song. I missed
my mom, I miss my dad, I miss the road, I miss my band, giving hugs and shaking hands. It's a mystery, I suppose, just how long this thing goes, but there'll be crowds and there'll be shows, and there will be light after dark, someday we aren't 6 feet apart.
And, you know, can't blame him for that, I guess. His family has to eat, too. You guys want to add anything about Luke Combs?
I know nothing about him, but what you just said about that song makes me wonder if there's going to be a wave of terrible, like, conspiracy theory country songs based on, like, they're sort of akin to the post, the jingoistic post 9/11 country songs. I wonder if there'll be just these reactionary terrible country songs about Corona and Dr. Fauci,
right? Microchips in the masks, such a slouchy, that kind of thing.
So what, I don't know.
Yeah, what rhymes with Fauci?
Well, what rhymes with don't trust the vaccine? I mean, that's
Irene.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Finally, we have post-retirement Garth Brooks, probably the most important person on the list, who after 15 years off started touring again in 2014. During his retirement, he held these regular weekend shows in Vegas. He became a musician in residence at a casino. They're basically the opposite of his concerts. So if you had gone to one of these expecting to see, you know, explosions and helicopters and Garth swinging from the ceiling on wires, it was none of those things. At his Vegas shows, he would just sing solo, either playing a guitar himself acoustically, or he would have someone there to play the guitar while he sang, and mostly not his own stuff, largely covers of his favorite songs. During his retirement, he also released a 5-disc set called Blame It All on My Roots, which was a compilation of the songs that had most influenced him, and it was sort of everything, from Buck Owens to the Doobie Brothers to Otis Redding. Since he's gone back on tour, he's won Entertainer of the Year 3 more times from the Country Music Association, so he's back in the lead. We talked in the last episode about Kenny Chesney tying that 4-time winner of the award. Now he's back on top, and in 2012, he took the lead for the most albums sold in the United States since 1991. 91 is the year the industry put in place a kind of scientific model for measuring. So he's passed the Beatles, Mariah Carey, and Metallica to be at the top. Since he's been touring, he's released 3 albums, Man Against Machine, Gunslinger, and a Christmas album, and he's got one more scheduled to come out. I've listened to some of the songs on these. None of them particularly jumped out to me. I didn't buy the albums. I probably need to do that and listen to them all the way through. I will say they were interesting. They're a different feel from his 90s stuff, but I don't want to say that they're bad. I want to go back and listen to them again. You guys want to say anything about Garth Brooks, post-retirement Garth Brooks?
I didn't even know he'd released new albums.
Yeah.
Do they get played on the radio? I mean, I just can't imagine anybody them hold. I mean,
you know, I part one of the reasons, other than, you know, doing some research for this podcast, I did hear a couple of them on the radio, and I thought, man, that's kind of good music. I wonder who that is. And then it was Garth Brooks. Yeah, especially the Man Against Machine album is. I think it's worth listening to. Like I said, I need to buy the thing and listen all the way through. But the few songs I have heard off of it were interesting. I don't want to add anything to it other than that. Michael, why don't you talk to us about Tomatogate?
Tomatogate comes from comments made by a radio consultant named Keith Hill, and he is talking about why there are so many more men played on country radio than women. So let's see. Here's what he says. If you want to make ratings in country radio, take females out. The reason is mainstream country radio generates 4 quarter hours from female listeners at the rate of 70-75%, and women like male artists. The expectation is we're principally a male format with a smaller female component. I've got about 40 music databases in front of me, and the percentage of females in the one with the most is 19%. Trust me, I play great female records, and what we've got some right now. They're just not the lettuce in our salad. The lettuce is Luke Bryan and Blake Shelton, Keith Urban, and artists like that. The tomatoes of our salad are the females. This made people very angry. Not least because it seems like he doesn't know what makes a good salad, right? Because who wants to eat the lettuce? The two best salads are caprese salad, which has no lettuce, and salade niçoise, which has very little lettuce. The tomatoes are much better than the lettuce. But I mean, obviously, this is just this is an argument from conservatism, essentially. It's an argument that says this is the way we've done it, so we're going to continue to do it this way. And it's wild to me that he would assume that women don't want to listen to women country artists. But that's what he assumed. And unfortunately, the situation seems to have gotten even worse in the intervening years. There's actually a smaller percentage of women being played on country radio than there were in, I think it was 2015 when he made those comments. So that's what TomatoGate is. It's a question. There are lots of great records being made by female country singers, some of them under that Americana banner, but not all of them. Golden Hour by Kacey Musgraves was a huge bestseller. Why wasn't it played on the radio? So TomatoGate refers to this division between what's actually being made and what's being played on the radio. And if we haven't said this before, country radio is weird because country radio still has a lot of power over country music in a way that rock radio, for example, has no power over rock music.
Yeah, it's interesting. Oh, go ahead, Coyle. I'm sorry.
Well, I had missed that women. This is women driving this. Last time that I read the article for this, and I don't know the answer to these questions, but A, do women listen to the radio more than men? It would certainly make sense, I think, that they do, particularly if people listen to the radio in cars more often. I mean, that would be, I think that would make sense. And is it true that women like to listen to male artists more than they like to listen to female artists? Again, I don't know the answer, but I think it's an interesting way to phrase it that I hadn't caught the last time.
Well, I mean, we talked about this before when I think Danny and I were arguing with you about radio playlists, but right. People like what you give them to like, I think, to a large extent. And so a radio programmer is always going to defend his conservatism by saying, oh, I'm just giving the people what they want.
Right.
I would think that on some level, as a radio programmer, your job is to get people to like better stuff. But maybe not. I don't know. I haven't worked in radio in a long time.
Well, and radio has become such a monopoly. I mean, just a couple of companies own virtually every radio station, right? And
right.
And so it's, to me, it's very top down. I mean, it looks diverse, like if you don't pay attention, but when you look underneath the surface, I mean, who owns all these things? It's a very small industry when you think about it. And it's interesting to me, though, also, not just that guys like sexism and conservatism, I suppose, maybe more than sex, maybe as much as sexism, but it's also, I mean, a function of letting bean counters and just sort of like data analysis drive decisions like this, right? I mean, because when he's just looking at pure numbers, he's probably not wrong, but he's just not looking, he's not reading the numbers appropriately, right? He's reading the numbers as an accountant, not as a social scientist or as a humanist in any way, right? And so, so I think that it says something about how much of country radio has become formulaic in general, and that formulaism, if that's a word, it just sort of appears as a very kind of retrograde and sexist stance in this particular case.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's probably a sexist. I don't know. But I would say the bigger problem here is a lack of imagination among radio programmers.
Yeah.
I mean, I have never been a radio programmer, but my understanding is what motivates them is that you not change the station when you're listening. So mm-hmm. they're going to play whatever they think it takes for you not to change the station when you're listening to them. So I'm happy to blame the listeners. Like I'm fine with saying that, but I mean, if you're a radio engineer or DJ or whatever, how do you get out of that?
I don't know. I mean, I had some experience in broadcasting before I stumbled into this life, and to me, it seems like people who listen to the radio a lot have a station that they identify with. Like, they are a fan of that station as much as anything else, and they're not going to turn that radio station no matter what, because they already have the bumper sticker on their car, right? I think that there's, I don't know that they make song by song decisions about that kind of thing. I think they develop their tastes based on, like Michael says, the product that their chosen medium is providing them, and they're just, because Agreed. It's providing it, I think it's good. And so, I mean,
they trust,
I don't know,
the station, and then the station helps form their taste.
Yeah,
that may be. I like I said, this is way out of my wheelhouse, and I only have my own radio listening experience to go on. I hate changing the radio station. Like, I hate it when other people do it, and I hate it when I do it. So it's whatever it's on when I get in the car is usually what it stays on. And if I'm the only one who's been driving, it's usually on the whatever the contemporary country station is in the area, because I've been doing this. So, yeah, maybe my taste is also being shaped by the radio station. But it's more, I hate flipping through the channels.
Of course it is. I mean, of course it's being shaped by the radio station.
Yeah. Hannibal Lecter says you covet what you see every day, right?
And that doesn't have to be a bad thing. I mean, we all get our taste from somewhere. Sure. I mean, but this is why I would suggest that perhaps the radio programmers have a higher responsibility to art than they imagine themselves to. That I mean, obviously you get into radio because you love music or you love talk radio. So why would you want to get in and then abandon that for the metrics that Danny's talking about, other than that you have to?
Well, because you want to stay in it.
Yeah. Well, let's kick the bean counters out of the top instead of the bottom.
But that's the point, though, right? I think that's something that we can come down and make a judgment about country radio then, is that it is more interested in commercial products than it is actual art. And so I think you've got places like Americana, where you have songs with thematic material that is heavier, right, and is more difficult and not breezy about, you know, spring break, right? And so that's the place maybe some of these more profound artists are finding their audiences, right? And instead of country radio. So it could be a function of females are more interesting and they're too interesting for country radio. So they now have a place in Americana, as a lot of older country stars do too. People like Rodney Crowell. Like, Rodney Crowell had this time in these two albums in the mid 90s that are very kind of forgettable because he's still trying to play to a country radio that has moved on. And as soon as the Americana market blossoms in the early 2000s, his best work happens. And because there's a place for it now, and you can really be who he is. And so I think maybe with women artists who have more interesting things to say, they're saying them without the fanfare of country radio.
All I know is, if I ruled the world, radio station programmers would join associate deans in the poorhouse they would have to live in, because they wouldn't have jobs anymore. Let the DJs decide what to play. Hire DJs who have taste, whom you trust, and set them loose.
I mean, I have no disagreement with that. Anything else on Tomatogate? Otherwise, we'll move on to another kind of gendered thing.
Hey, listeners have never had a caprese salad. Make sure you go have one. They're real good.
That's hilarious. And it's not unrelated. I'm sorry, dropped my pocket knife. It's not unrelated. We're talking about bro country, right? And so I think there's a reason that the numbers looked the way they looked when that guy was talking in 2015. It's because bro country was the marketable thing for so much of that half decade up to that point. And so I think that this is probably, I mean, he's responding just by looking at the numbers that were created by the circumstance of this very popular style of called bro country. And really, I mean, I don't know what I can say about it that isn't just inherent in the name. I mean, and we've talked already about Georgia Florida Line, who has a song that's kind of a prototypical, like a lot of their early their songs are prototypical bro country songs, right? But it's called Dayum Baby, spelled Dayum, comma, baby, as to
twisting, watching you sipping on that drink, I saw you smile back and I didn't miss that. It's on a little later on, Wink. And your song comes on, you dance along. I can't believe how bad you got me. Like, damn, baby, damn, baby, damn. I love standing here watching you breaking it down. Baby, damn, baby, damn. You keep pulling me in when you're spinning around. Baby, round, baby, round. I can see you'll probably be keeping me up all night. Yeah, but that's alright. This girl, you got me like, damn, baby, damn, baby, damn. Yeah, you got me like, damn, baby, damn, baby.
And the song is about exactly what you think it'd be about, but content-wise, that this concern with the pleasure of young, you know, men, right? Young kind of like men who are on the, well, I'm going to read something that'll get to this. Probably the best thing I read about this, maybe the one that initiated the term even, was by Jody Rosen. And it's called The Rise of Bro Country. And it was like in the New Yorker or New York Magazine or something like that.
I think it was Slate.
Was it Slate? Okay. It said country has always been pop's most mature, like it seeks this kind of older world wisdom, right? Young country singers have learned to project gravitas beyond their years, singing songs about the home and hearth and other grown-up stuff. Bro country breaks with that tradition. And he's talking about Georgia Florida Line here. Hubbard and Kelly pay lip service to, quote, little farm towns and pickup trucks and such. But what they really care about is getting drunk and laid. Okay. And that's, I think, to me, that's the thematic material of bro country, right? So it's all framed as if it's traditional because it's taking place in small town America, Southern America. But the concerns are ones of like pleasure, right? And not necessarily pain. And I think that that's kind of a philosophical stance of bro country. Go ahead, Coyle.
Are you saying that's not representative of rural America?
I'm saying.
So I don't know I don't know what your high school experience was like, but getting drunk and laid was a pretty dominant theme.
But that's where traditional country was looking for things beyond youth culture. Right. And bro country embraces youth culture. Right. The basest version of youth culture. Right.
Right. Like, and again, I think that's a perfectly fair representation of rural America. And when you say it's terrible, like I agree, it's absolutely terrible, but it's not unrelated to what's happening.
But I think what I'm saying is, like, traditional country would be more critical of those kinds of stances. There's a more somber tone to it.
Yes.
And by abandoning the somber tone, you've created something different. You've lost your sort of sense of moral distance from that, and you're just sort of accepting it for what it is.
Well, and again, I'm perfectly willing to say that this is terrible, but I think that the abandoning of the somber tone is reflective of a change in the culture that's being expressed in the music.
I mean, growing up where I grew up, I always saw people behave in that way, right? The music didn't celebrate it. What we're talking about here is the music normalizing this kind of and making it a legitimate part of country life, right? Of small town life. I'm not saying that doesn't exist now, but who knows how much of the reason it exists now is they hear it on the radio for the last 10 years, right? There's a cyclical. Maybe I'm conservative in my own way here by saying that art has an impact on us and actually does. You know, it's not very leftist of me, I know, but I do believe that that's true. I mean, art, there's a connection both directions there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's causal here and what's reflective. I think it has been normalized, right? I think that thing that was occasional, and it wasn't, I don't know that it was shameful when I was in high school. It certainly had been in living memory, but I don't know that it was for us when we were going through high school. If you were going out and partying on the weekends or in the evenings or whatever, I don't know that there was the same kind of judgment that there had been even 10 or 15 years before for us that there had been for previous generations. Yeah, it's now normal. So the music is reflecting that. And I want to get to this when we get to the end and talk again about what country music is. But if country music is just reflecting the ethos of rural America, I don't know that this is somehow inauthentic or improper for what's going on.
I have no illusions about the moral high ground of rural America. Like I don't buy into that mythology that it's more real than urban America, right? I know that it's trash in many places. You know, I'm not saying entirely, but I know that rural America has a horrible underbelly to it, right? I'm not saying that that's not the case. What I'm saying is, this is a new kind of music that abandons any kind of critique of that, right? And I think the best country music was always a little bit critical. I mean, even into the 90s, I think in the last episode I talked about how Ketchum's Small Town Saturday Night, is that what it's called? That song has like an awareness of the failings of that life, right? And that's the country tradition, is having an awareness of that failing, right? To utterly abandon any kind of like concern for the dark side of this, that's the new development. That's the bro country, right? And that's what's so like, I think, poisonous about it. And it has, I mean, the fact that it's so popular at the time proves that you're right, that mindset exists in small town America, right? But that doesn't mean that it's quality art, because it doesn't challenge. I mean, quality art challenges mindsets, right? It doesn't just like acquiesce to them. And so, I mean, to me, that's what makes it sort of terrible music. And its heart is that it abandons any pretense to challenge.
Bro country has an awful lot in common, musically and thematically, with a certain sort of hedonistic, wealth-obsessed hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, they're really doing the same thing for slightly different audiences, and in many cases, not different audiences at all. So, if we were doing this series on hip hop, we would have to take stock of the kind of girls and cars hip hop that I think people who see hip hop as a valid art form would probably say debase what the good hip hop is out there doing. Conscious mm-hmm. hip-hop, or however you want to think about it. And I think bro country is doing something very similar on the country music side of things. I mean, it's no surprise they go together. I mean, the big development in bro country over the last 5 years or so has been its adoption of hip-hop.
Yeah, because those audience, I mean, whatever country is whatever you are, right?
Also, Danny, because I'm trying to find a value neutral term. The most southern of my classmates in high school, the things they listened to were country music and hip hop.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. It took them 15 years to put it together.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you had the Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy band, Big and Rich.
$100 bills, and it kills and it thrills like the horns on my Silverado grill. And I buy the bar a double round of Crown. And everybody's getting down in this town. Ain't never gonna be the same. 'Cause I saddle up my horse and I ride into the city. I make a lot of noise 'cause the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway on my old stud Leroy. And the girls say, save a horse, ride a cowboy. Everybody says, save a horse, ride a cowboy.
They're sort of, I think, really an important influence on this too, right, from the previous decade. And and I think that opened up the floodgates of this kind of just hedonistic, I think you said, Michael, is a great way to put it. And this is honestly why I was only half kidding when I talked about Georgia-Florida Line having some correlation with coronavirus denial, right? I mean, I think that there is a stance, like an identity that you adopt and that your tastes reflect, right? That's based on just sort of rebellion for the sake of rebellion, right? And being indigestible to the straits or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and when middle-class white people see that in hip-hop, they call it nihilistic.
Yeah.
But you don't hear people calling bro country nihilistic, even though it clearly is, right? The only thing that matters is your tailgate and your jean shorts or whatever the other six tropes are.
And the size of your whatever pickup truck, right? Yeah. And to me, I mean, if I were to come up with my own theory of Trump and look back at the people I went to high school with, I would say one of the greatest predictors of people who are now kind of like MAGA people were you listened to like Rat and Poison back in high school, right? That kind of music that was kind of dumb and hedonistic and just party music, right? I think that shapes your imagination about your place in the world in some ways. And I think bro country is a new version of that. There's nothing good to say about bro country for me.
Have you heard the track where they take six bro country songs and change the, they play them line for line and you can't tell it's a different song.
Cottonwood falling like snow in July.
I said fireflies popping like a 4th of July, yeah.
The breeze blowing in, your hair blowing round. You're scanning through the stations looking for that country sound.
Truck's jacked up, flat bills flip back.
It's going now just right.
Girl, you make my speakers go boom boom.
Almost over.
We can roll them down, pop them up, cruise them round, get stuck.
Nothing but time tonight. Let's get to killing it. Long as I'm rocking with you, girl.
Falling like this.
You might want to close your eyes for this.
Yes, yeah, I have heard that. It was, it's kind of, it's almost like, remember that video that was that's from Sinclair news stations where they're all hitting the same talking points across the country? It's exactly that, right? There's a kind of just homogeneity to this music that is based on, like I said, the most cynical and kind of debaucherous philosophy. And so, yeah, I'm not saying that without this music, Southern America would be much more virtuous, but I'm just saying great art would criticize the culture in some way, right? Even if the great, you know, Southern artists never gave up their affiliation, their affection for being from Arkansas or whatever, right? They understood the down part of that life. I mean, all the mining songs, I mean, there's something both proud about being a miner, but also like knowing how horrifying it is, right? And embracing that and owning that. And that's what this music just refuses to do, to take any kind of responsible stance against it.
If the criteria of art is true, beautiful, and good, I mean, there's nothing true, beautiful, or good about any of the bro country I've heard.
Yeah.
Except for maybe Eric Church's Springsteen.
To this day, when I hear that song, I see you standing there on that lawn.
discount shades, store-bought tan, flip-flops and cut-off jeans. Somewhere between that setting sun, I'm on fire, I'm born to run. You looked at me and I was done, but we were just getting started. I was singing to you, you were singing to me. I was so alive, never been more free. Fired up my daddy's lighter and we sang, oh, 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 oh. Stayed there till they forced us out and took the long way to your house. I can still hear the sound of you saying, don't go. When I think about you, I think about 17. I think about my old Jeep. I think about the stars in the sky. Funny how a melody sounds like a memory, like a soundtrack to a July Saturday night. Springsteen.
That's kind of a border case. I like that song.
Right, and I certainly don't deny that that's the criteria for art. And I mean, I agree with you guys. I don't particularly care for bro country, and largely for the reasons that you're listing, Danny. Although I'm hesitant because they're. I'm not sure that criticism is a necessary component of great art. I think you can have great art that's celebratory also. And maybe it's celebrating something terrible, but I think that part of that true, beautiful, and good is this accurately capturing the spirit of whatever you're trying to capture the spirit of. And it's a terrible spirit, right? And I think this is, I want to get into the end of, one of the reasons I think for the decline of country music has been the decline of rural America. And when you're trying to reflect something that is in a really terrible condition, either it's going to be just utter misery, or you're going to have to focus on the couple of parts that maybe it still has, even if those parts are terrible, as these are. Mm. So I would not pick from my high school years. I didn't really do a whole lot of partying, but if I were to go back and look at all of us in high school and try to pick out the best parts, I wouldn't pick the partying at night. But I understand why there are people that I went to high school with who would.
I mean, I guess I would kind of adapt a little bit of what you said about the decline of modern country music. I think it's corporate America selling a vision of small town life to itself, telling small town life a vision of itself that is both kind of debased and false, right? And small town America is buying into it by listening to this, if they listen to it.
Again, I don't know that I'd say it's false. I mean, that the big trucks and the substance abuse, I mean, that is small town life.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but what I'm saying is it's reductive,
but not inaccurate.
Yeah.
Nope.
We should move on.
I do want to come back to some of this. Either you guys want to talk about Boyfriend Country? That's a more recent development.
Yeah, real recent. It's something that various people have proposed as the sequel to Bro Country. Bro Country is very masculine, about celebrating masculine things. It's often mixed with Nickelback-esque hard rock or hip-hop. Boyfriend Country is sensitive, and it's mixed with contemporary R&B instead. I haven't heard much of it, but from my understanding, it's dominant right now.
It's like emo.
Right. Well, we had that with alt country, so, you know.
Well, no, it's not emo, right? Because emo, from my understanding, is mostly about venting your frustrations with the world. Boyfriend Country is about, you know, you're singing a lovely song to a lovely lady.
Oh, I see.
That's why it's Boyfriend Country. So, I mean, in that sense, it's probably less aggravating than Bro Country, but I suspect it's going to get old just as fast and stick around just as long.
That Georgia Florida Line song, Bless, then, is kind of probably one. I would probably put it right there. Yeah.
Well, Michael, I know you have to go. So, Danny, if you can hang out for a bit, maybe we can wrap up the episode. But, Michael, briefly, if you want to answer, what have we left out? Like, if we were to go back and do this again, what would you have included? And then what do you think is the greatest country song?
The greatest country song, and you have a list here, and, you know, I could go off list, but I'm not going
to. No, go off list, country, please.
The greatest country song is He Stopped Loving Her Today. I just don't know. I don't know how you get better than that, even as a song, let alone a country song. So, and, you know, for some reason, our listeners have not listened to He Stopped Loving Her Today by George Jones. Drop everything and go listen to it. It is treacly and a little bit silly and enormously powerful. Kind of everything country music does well. What have we left out?
And on that, on the what's the greatest country song, my goal at this point, my intention at this point, is to put this up as a poll on the Facebook page. So feel free to add to it between now and whenever this episode drops.
Well, the one I thought about that's not on here is Mama Tried by Merle Haggard.
Ah, yeah, it's a good song.
But I think He Stopped Loving Her Today is a better song.
They were super big in the Ken Burns documentary on Will the Circle Be Unbroken.
I noticed that.
And it was only in the last episode, but, I mean, it's a fine song. I don't know that I'd say it's the national anthem of country music or whatever.
I think they like it just because so many different people did it.
Right.
It's like Mule Skinner Blues. That's the other one that showed up every 5 minutes in that documentary. And, you know, I don't know that anybody thinks Mule Skinner Blues is the best country song, but, man, a lot of people did it.
Sure. So anything that we should have included?
You know, nothing's coming to mind. We did talk about Western Swing, right?
Right at the very beginning, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because that's the only thing I don't remember talking about that I thought maybe we should, but it sounds like we did after all.
Sure. All right, well, I wanted to just have us do a little bit of wrap up, and again, Michael, if you got to bounce, that's fine. So we've talked about the decline of country music, and I want to push back on that just a little bit, in part because of the nature of what we've done. Is country music worse now than it was 40 years ago or 60 years ago? And I think all of us kind of have the prejudice that it is, but having done this, I'm hesitant to stick to that, in part because if we look back at country music in the 70s, our episode on that, we talked about outlaw country, right? We talked about some of the big names, Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, and Merle Haggard, and Kris Kristofferson. We really hit kind of the top, the cream of the crop. We didn't talk about a lot of the people who were popular then. Right, so we didn't spend a lot of time talking about Floyd Kramer or Farron Young, or Hank Snow or Jerry Reed, or I mean, we could just keep going through the people who were big sellers, who were big names at the time. We talked about the best of the best. So today, who are the best of the best that 40 years from now people are still going to be talking about? Are there really fewer of them, and are they doing worse music than Waylon Jennings, then Hank Williams, then Patsy Cline, then the people we talked about? I don't know. I think when you phrase it that way, I don't know that that's the case.
I don't know. I think Hank Snow is great to listen to. I mean, he's not as well remembered, but his music is still like really timeless, right?
And it's
if you
fine.
Listen to it, it's still really good. And oh gosh, who's the guy who I can't remember his name. Like a Bakersfield guy, the kind of established Bakersfield before Merle Haggard.
Is Buck Owens?
No, before Buck Owens, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But he's awesome. I mean, but you don't hear about him anymore. But if you dig and listen to it, it's still really great. I think what I would say is that country radio is worse now than it was in the past. And I think that the best music that we would call recognized as country music is off of the radio. And I think that music is every bit as good as any music has been. Right. I think that the music, there is great music being made, right. Probably more than ever because sure. of just the number of people, right. I mean, just statistically that would probably work. Right. But I think it is up to kind of an individual consumer to seek out something beyond the radio for something that's not just whatever's going to sell the most that day, right? And I think that in the way that DJs have less individual power now than they used to, I think that responsibility has been shifted to listeners to kind of find their own music. And like I said, for me, it's been the Americana genre has been like the housing for most of that. But and Apple Music will have an algorithm for you. It'll recognize something that you have liked and send you to something else that's really good, right? So,
you know, I gotta say, Amazon's algorithm, they changed their music streaming service when COVID hit and made it free, actually. So I don't know if it's free for everyone or just for Prime members. So you can sort of treat Amazon like a radio now. And it's really good. As in, it does a good job of picking music that I already like. So maybe not really good, right? Maybe that's the opposite.
Yeah, that's the thing. You want to challenge yourself, right, on some level, to find something that isn't something you've already liked, always already liked. And so,
Hey, I did the alt country episode with you guys, so I can check that box. Even granting that premise, then country music is worse now, or at least country radio is worse now. I think it's interesting to kind of kick around. Well, why is that? And kind of three related reasons that I came up with. Again, assuming that all the way back to the beginning of this series, country music is sort of the music of rural America. There has historically been a poverty component to that. And I think with the decline of poverty, that's cut into country music source material. Not that there aren't any poor people anymore, but that there are certainly fewer poor people than there used to be. And poverty, the standard for what poverty is, has changed. So poverty in 21st century America, especially in rural America, is no longer the idea that you may not have enough food to eat, or that you're going to have to do backbreaking manual labor just to survive. I'm not saying it's never that. I'm saying there's less of that than there was even 40 years ago, maybe even 30 or 20 years ago, right? If you are growing up poor in the 2020s or 2010s, I guess I don't want to say 2020s because I don't want to predict what might happen, but you're probably not out picking cotton by hand. That's just probably not happening. Again, not never, but it's not as common as it was. And I think that cuts into some of that driving power of country music. And then related to that, the decline of rural America. Rural America has just been eviscerated. If you want to know one of the reasons why Donald Trump won election in 2016, look at the ghetto that rural America has become. And there are all sorts of reasons for that that are far too complicated to go into right now. It has everything to do with, you know, the leaving of industrial jobs and the exit of mining jobs, the collapse of agriculture as a meaningful industry for individuals or families. I mean, we could go through all sorts of reasons. Related to that, rural America has always had a substance abuse problem, but that's changed even in the last 10 or 15 years away from cigarettes and alcohol, although cigarettes and alcohol are still there, to much more devastating drugs like meth and opioids. Not being either a meth user or an opioid user, I can't say too much about this, but my understanding is it's one thing to write and perform music while you are drinking or smoking, and another thing entirely to try to do it while you're using meth or opioids, while you're in the late stages of use, certainly. So kind of the two sources of country music, poverty and rural America, have been gutted, for better or worse, and then what's left is dealing with issues that are far and away beyond anything people, again, 30 years ago had to deal with. The substances now are so much more difficult to rise out of or to do anything meaningful while you're using them. Anyway, that's what I came up with. That might explain some of the decline of country music is the cutting out of its base, the sapping away at its foundation. Danny, what do you think? Am I talking crazy talk here?
I think there's some truth to that.
Blame capitalism.
No, I would say more like just, I don't know if you could just call it just suburbanization. Like, I think there's just been a general homogenization of America, right? And I think that for all of our it's paradoxical for all of our increasing fragmentation as a culture, as a political culture, in terms of our entertainment, there's been a flattening, right? And we all basically consume the same thing. It's a fast food nation, right? And I think that kind of homogenization is a big part of it as well. And I think that the fact that, like Michael said before, you've got a Southern culture that listens to the same thing that people listen to in the cities is another feature. It's just like, so the cultural productions are going to look different because they're not as distinct anymore, I think, on some level, right? And I do think that the monopolization of entertainment, of radio particularly, has a role in it. I think that they are looking for profitable things. And so once Luke Bryan establishes Bro Country and we've got acts that could pull that off, it's a producer town and we're going to produce as much of this product as we can and then move on to the next thing. Right. And once people are tired of that, it'll be boyfriend country or whatever. Right. And so I do think that, yeah, there are economic forces in there as well that have some kind of like effect on it. But yeah, it's a really good question. I don't know that there's a single answer to it.
Sure.
And I am very suspicious as well as saying that music is worse now than it was then. It's in different places, right? Like some of my favorite music that's ever been produced has been produced in the last few years, right? And it's just, you have to be kind of willing to look in new places for it. And I think, and just be willing to listen to new voices as well. One of my kind of pet peeves is I love to go down YouTube rabbit trails and just start watching old videos of things, right? One of the first comments is, man, I wish music could be like this again. Music today sucks, right? It's like, I don't believe that's true, right? I mean, I do think country radio sucks, right, by and large. But I don't necessarily think that music today sucks, right? I think that's your failure of an initiative, if that's what you think. And there is really great music to be consumed out there. And so, yeah, it's a big, you know, complicated, you know, kind of a mess of a topic, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought about ending with who should people be listening to, but honestly, I think that would be better as like a standalone episode, just because I think it's better to look back. It's more in the spirit of country music to look back than to look forward. Anything that we've left out? So we've done, I don't know how many episodes. This will end up being 40 episodes on country music. Are there any topics or artists that we didn't talk about but should have gotten more attention?
Well, there's plenty of artists that we just didn't bring up in any given episode. And I always, after we record, I'm like, oh, why didn't I talk about Highway 101, right? Or whoever, you know, that's
one interesting one to pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved Highway 101. So there's a million bands and artists that we didn't talk about that we should have. I also do think there is a very distinct and like strain of country music, Canadian country music, that isn't just Canadian artists. Like, yes, like Anne Murray, as you said before, is Canadian, right? So it isn't just Canadian artists, but there's an industry of Canadian country music that doesn't really make it across, and it tends to be very idiosyncratic and quirky, very traditionalist in a lot of ways. But also, I mean, I think it has a lot more in common with like alt country Americana than it does what we call country radio. But Canadian country is actually really interesting. One of my favorite musicians is a guy named Corb Lund, Corblund, an amazing songwriter, very witty, very silly. There's a lot of like comical songs, but the art of his lyrics, and it's incredible. Like he's great. I highly recommend listening to him, but he's like part of this Canadian scene that is very weird. I discovered it first on an airplane. I think I was flying in Canada, on my way to Europe, and the airplane had like a country station that was Canadian. And I'm like, this is so much better than on the country radio in America. And so, yeah, like that's one I would kind of like to do a show on some days, Canadian acts.
I'm trying to think if country music in America gets its start in the South, what would that mean in Canada? Like, is it from Quebec? Like, is it all like free Quebec stuff, or
it's a lot of plains? Like, they have a lot of ranch life in Canada. And so you have a lot of like it's more akin to Western than right. Southern music, right? And so you've got a lot of that. You've got a lot of the same kind of like drinking songs and that kind of thing. So Small Town Life isn't Southern per se, but it still exists in Canada. And
sure.
And yeah, they don't have to worry about healthcare, right? But, but they have other concerns that find their way into the music. So, right. But yeah,
it's all Southern in Canada. It's not like there's a lot of Northerners there. I'd agree. I had Western music down as the thing that I thought we could have talked a little more about. So we talked about it briefly at the very beginning. We talked a little bit about Western swing and Bob Wills and some of that. That's in part the leaving out of Western music is something the industry intentionally did. So they dropped Western. It was country and Western, and now it's just country. And that drop was made in like the late 60s, early 70s. I mean, it was early in the days of the industry. So there is a Western component. So we could have talked about Don Williams or Don Edwards or Michael Martin Murphy or Sons of the San Joaquin or Riders in the Sky if you like Toy Story. Sleep of the Wheel. So there are lots of individuals and groups that could have been included. None of them have the name recognition of the Nashville or Bakersfield or Austin folks, but they're all important certainly.
Yeah, I think a couple others. One is I think Texas deserves its own episode. Like Texas is such a diverse musical state that I think Texas alone would be really interesting to explore, and it would of course have a lot of overlap with swing music.
Right.
So I think Texas would be kind of interesting. And there was another one I had in my head and I just lost.
I meant to ask you guys about this, and now it's too late. But I don't know that this means anything, but I had noticed that there seemed to be a large number of country music singers from like the last 40 years who were born and raised in Oklahoma. So Garth Brooks, Vince Gill, I mean, a lot of the 90s guys were, but even a lot of the contemporary ones today. I don't think it's a majority, but I think it's probably more than any other single state, at least of the ones we've talked on, have come from Oklahoma. I don't know if that means anything or not. I don't know if people in Oklahoma are more musical than other places, and none of them get their hit breakout there, right? They all go to Nashville or Austin, but Oklahoma might deserve its own episode, although I'm not entirely sure why.
Yeah, that is interesting to speculate if there's maybe a college scene or something that. It's close enough to Texas that it comes out as country or something.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. I thought of the other one is Southern gospel, country gospel. I was at my parents, helping my dad out, and there are all these infomercials. Alan Jackson has an album of hymns, basically.
Precious Memories. It's really good.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Right. But that is a move that so many country singers make, is they have to do their gospel album, right? And I also thought Christmas albums would be really interesting. And in case we never get to it, for the listener out there, Rodney Crowell, I know I talk about Rodney Crowell all the time, he's one of my favorite artists, but he has an amazing Christmas album called Christmas Everywhere. And it is basically a concept album that's cynical about the commercialization of Christmas. And it's hilarious and brutal and amazing. It came out in 2018. It's called Christmas Everywhere, and it is unbelievable. So it's worth your time.
Is it as good as his song Can't Stop a Woman When She's Out of Control?
It is. It's got that kind of sense of humor, right?
That is my favorite of his songs. So that's...
It's a great song, yeah. Yeah, get a bus stop full of hunkies that don't ever forget. He's amazing. Rodney Crowell's the best. I love him. Again, a Texan, right?
Sure. I want to end, and we don't have to come up with an answer for this. I do intend to throw this over to the listeners. Danny, what is the greatest country song?
I mean, Michael said he stopped loving her today. It's really hard to argue with that. I mean, that is sort of a seminal song, right? That if you had to pick one country song to cover the diversity, you know, the variousness of country music, that you couldn't go wrong with that one, right? I think I might have put this on that list, but I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry by Hank Williams, I think, captures some of the spirit as well, like that's essential to country music. So, yeah, I think I would put there. I think I might have put some other things on there on Seriously. I do think Guitars and Cadillacs, etc. by Dwight Yoakam is a perfect country song. I'm not sure it's the greatest country song.
It's a great one, certainly.
And just as a joke, I've never even called me by my name, because they actually have a verse in there about it being the perfect country song because of the topics they work in.
Yeah, so our list, and I will put this up on the Facebook page as a poll. I will honestly be a little bit surprised if He Stopped Loving Her Today doesn't win, just because...
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even necessarily like it better than some of these other songs, but it really is. Like, if I wanted to introduce someone else, and the Ken Burns documentary makes a big deal of this, but if I wanted to introduce someone else to country music, it is the song you would use to do it. Yeah. He Stopped Loving Her...
Go ahead. It's not even my favorite George Jones song. I think The Grand Tour is my favorite George Jones song, but I still, if I had to come up with a kind of a song that represents country music, I would do that one. Yeah.
Gosh, I think my favorite country George Jones song is, what is this called? It's the one about the guy who's working at the gas station, and someone else pulls up in a Corvette. I think it's just called The Corvette Song.
Okay.
The guy who's working at the gas station is like, oh, I love that so much. And the car owner is like, oh, you should, we'll go here, take it for a drive. He's like, no, I met the woman in your car.
Then I handed him my keys and said, here, take her for a spin. The old man scratched his head and then he looked at me and grinned. He said, son, you just don't understand. It ain't the car I want. It's the brunette in your bed that turned me on. I had one that was hotter than a $2 pistol. She was the fastest thing around. Long and lean, every young man's dream. She turned every head in town. She was built and fun to handle, son. I'm glad that you dropped in.
She reminds me of the one I loved back
then. I remember that song. That's a
great song too. It reminds me of one I used to like. Is that the like?
Yeah, it reminds me of one down at the bank took it from me. So on the list, and this is Michael, Danny, and I put this together. I don't know where you're getting yours other than just for fun, but it's from previous episodes. As I was editing them, I kept track of any time we would say this could be, you know, one of the top country songs, or this is, you know, the best country song, even if it was said in jest. I threw it on the list, and then from the Ken Burns documentary, and then anything else is from top 10 lists that I found around the internet. So possibilities, He Stopped Loving Her Today, I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, Friends in Low Places, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, Walk the Line, Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys, Blue Moon of Kentucky, Guitars, Cadillacs, Amarillo by Morning, You Never Even Called Me by My Name, and Mama Tried. Have you done the Ken Burns documentary yet?
I have not. I have I have a low tolerance for Ken Burns, and so I haven't watched him since Jazz.
So you probably haven't done the special features then either. They ask all of the guests this. So everyone, all of the country stars and producers and all of that get asked the question, and they all give, you know, various answers. Most of them say something that's on this list. But one of them, and this is the only person I think in any of the special features where, like, if you were in the room with me right now, I would punch you in the face. His response to that question was, Wind Beneath My Wings.
What?
Yeah, so
by, wait, that's what by Bette Midler?
Yes. That was his answer to what's the greatest country song was Wind Beneath My Wings. Like,
that
man,
doesn't make any sense.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. We'll kick that over to the listeners and let you guys decide what the greatest country song is. And Danny and Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed this a lot.
I've had a blast. Even the last couple, which I've hated listening to the music, except for Chris Stapleton, like I said. It's been so much fun to talk with you guys about, and I've learned a ton. And yeah, it's been great.
Thanks again, Danny. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting ChristianHumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God.
The end of a 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost.